This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. For lovers of technology, this is the best of times. Technology just keeps getting better, faster, smaller, more powerful. Though TV screens have grown to the size of those in movie theaters, the pixels have gotten smaller, yet greater in number. 4K TVs are no longer just a gimmick. They're the next wave. But should you buy one now? Or wait. Virtual reality is becoming a reality, so is now the time to jump on board, or should you wait for the next generation to come along? Apple is out with new MacBooks, Microsoft creates a new category of computer with the Surface Studio, and Google and Amazon and others are battling it out for voice control of your smart home. And that just scratches the surface of how technology is influencing our lives and changing our world. And here to share even more details of what's new, what's coming, what you should buy during Black Friday sales, and what you should wait for are two people who make a living following all of this. Ben Johnson is host of Marketplace Tech that you hear every morning here on WFAE. He's also the host of the digital-only podcast Codebreaker, season two of which began today. And Ben joins us from Marketplace Studios in New York. Welcome.
Hello. How are you, Mike?
I'm great. Also sitting right next to Ben at Marketplace is Tim Moynihan, who writes for Wired, where he covers hardware for Gadget Lab, including cameras, TVs, ultra-high-definition video, and virtual reality, among other things. Thank you for being here, Tim. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it, too.
And as we go through the program, you may have some questions or comments. You're welcome to join us via email at charlottetalks@wfae.org or on Facebook or on Twitter as well. Is it an exaggeration to say that if you're a tech fan, this is the best of times? Or would it be more accurate to say that given the unending advancement of technology, that when it comes to technology, it's always the best of times?
I don't know, man. If we had a time machine, I'd be able to tell you. But it certainly feels that way. I mean, we've got all of these things we've been talking about for a really long time seem to finally be arriving. Whether that's the virtual assistants or the voice assistants in the home or virtual reality, we've been talking about some of this stuff for a couple of years. We finally have some things you can actually buy. And you can actually afford, depending on your price point. So I think, yeah, this feels like pretty good times. Yeah.
Yeah. Today's great. Tomorrow's going to be amazing. And then the week after that is just going to be even better.
Or scary, because some of the things that we've been seeing in movies, in science fiction movies and Star Trek films, and I've forgotten the name of that Tom Cruise film where he's walking down a mall and the billboards are
Minority
talking directly
Report.
Directly to him. Well, we have geofencing with your cell phones now. We have virtual reality. We have everything's in the cloud and available to us all the time. And then we have these smart homes that are beginning to pop up with gadgets and devices. We're experiencing a paradigm shift in a way, aren't we?
Absolutely. And also, you know, not only that, but you mentioned the smart home. We also have new kinds of viruses and malware, and, you know, the entire internet has been slowed down in recent weeks by a huge botnet that was created by smart home devices and cameras, apparently. So we've got new problems as well as new.
Yeah, there was a story this morning about infections targeting these new Philips. I've forgotten the name of the product, but it's a light bulb you can change the color and hue of.
The hue.
And evidently, they can be infected by worms, and they can infect each other even though they're not connected to each other. That's just bizarre.
It's a weird world.
So the question I have, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about light bulbs, but the question I have is why do you want to have a light bulb that changes color that's connected to your smartphone so you can do it at will anywhere on the planet? What's the point of that?
Well, speaking as someone who has one of those, it's fun. You know, it's fun. I have a light bulb in my room that I can just, you know, change from blue to red to dim it and do all that stuff. It syncs up to music, so when you're playing music, it can flash. Obviously, not the most important thing in the world, but it's just, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, for under $100, you can get something that for a small apartment makes your small apartment a little bit better.
Okay.
But as you said, yeah, there are one, everything is networked. That means everything is sort of a vulnerability in your home, and people need to realize that. And I think we're just on the forefront now of you know, security being made for all these smart appliances.
Because evidently these light bulbs, which can infect each other, can also infect your Nest thermostat. And if your refrigerator is connected to the internet, it can infect that and your garage door opener, which you can probably operate from your cell phone. It can infect that. I mean, this is pretty scary stuff when you come right down to it.
It is scary. Yeah, it is scary. And there's a lot of, you know, there are a lot of ways in which companies are building these things where the security isn't obvious. You know, I know what the password for my phone is, but what is the security like on my Hue light bulb, or what is the security like on my Nest thermostat? Some of that stuff is less obvious to the user, and it's less obvious that it's important to actually have security on those smart home devices that don't necessarily always have a screen or an easy way to interface with the actual machine that you're connecting to the internet and that could be infected by the internet.
I also think we just wrote a really good episode of Black Mirror. Have you ever
exactly.
ever seen that series? That would be a really good Netflix episode of Black Mirror. Your house just taking control of you. And
yeah.
So let's talk about something that people are, I guess, they buy regularly, and are, if you're a TV fan, you've probably been looking at these things in the Best Buy or the Costco or wherever, and that's these brand new, relatively new, 4K ultra high definition TVs. If you've never seen one in person, you need to go look at them because they're unreal. I mean, the pictures are unreal. What makes them so much better than the HD TVs that were such an improvement over standard definition?
There's a couple of things. One is the resolution. Obviously, the resolution is four times greater than HD. So it's really sharp. And the argument for a long time was you're not really going to see that sharpness unless you're really close to the TV or you have a huge TV. Mm-hmm. That is sort of changing. There are other aspects of picture quality that they're really sort of tapping into. They have an expanded color gamut, which means you're seeing, you know, thousands, maybe even millions more colors on a good 4K TV than an HD TV. A lot of them support something called HDR video, which if you're familiar with HDR photography, it's way better than HDR photography. It's basically HDR video sort of makes things look way more realistic, and they do this with sort of brightness controls and contrast controls that really make things like, you know, sunshine gleaming off the hood of a car. It actually hurts your eyes when you're looking at it. It looks like real life. So image quality is getting better, and that sort of goes hand in hand with the resolution benefits.
Well, I was going to ask you about HDR versus UHD. What's the difference, and what do those letters all mean? UHD is obviously ultra high definition, but what does HDR mean?
High dynamic range. Basically, there are most of the TVs that are doing it with a way brighter backlight system than your normal TV. So the way most TVs work, LCD TVs, is that they have a backlight system behind the screen that sort of, you know, controls the brightness, and to control contrast, they have something called a local dimming system. The good ones do. So what that does is, you know, it allows light to be shining through the screen, but then it can be controlled at not at the pixel level, but closer and closer to the pixel level now with today's TVs. The OLED is another technology that is really, really, really good. And what that allows the picture to do is actually control the light at the pixel level. And that's something that LCD TVs will never do. So
I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. No, I was just going to say then that is why when you look at an OLED TV, and I just saw one the other day, why the blacks are so black. They're black because there is no backlight. The pixel's providing the light. And when it's black, it's off.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, that's something LCD TVs will never be able to do. However, it's getting better. The number of dimming zones in an LCD TV, they're getting more and more and more and more to the point where they're getting almost as good as OLED, but they'll never be as good, but they're getting pretty good.
So two key questions about these 4K TVs, which are breathtaking when you see them, and you immediately want them, price tag be damned, although that does stop me. is there any programming that takes advantage of 4K? Because they're running those specially created video loops in the stores. If you stuck it up to your Time Warner cable or your satellite TV hookup, would there be any programming for them?
More and more. I mean, Netflix, Amazon has they have streaming 4K content. It's still not, you know, not everything is in 4K right now. But there are more sports satellite providers that are doing 4K streams. I know a lot of special events. I think the U.S. Open or the Masters had sort of a special 4K feed. It wasn't the entire thing. But it's getting there. It's sort of the early days of HD all over again.
Okay.
I just got a PlayStation Pro in the mail to check out, and I feel like the, you know, they're experimenting with providing that level of resolution to televisions, and that's part of the reason they say that they've released these new PlayStations. Mm-hmm. So you're starting to get companies experimenting with it.
So would it be safe to say that if you're going to buy one of these things, the best shot at the moment of getting actual 4K programming is going to be on a streaming service or Blu-ray?
Yes. Okay. It will also upscale HD content. And unlike the switch from standard definition to HD, it's the same aspect ratio, so you're not going to get crazy,
weirdness,
you know,
there.
Boxed off video. So
that was going to be my next question. What does upscaled standard high definition look like on a 4K TV?
Not as good as 4K, but better than HD. Like right in the middle. Right in the middle there. It looks good. I mean, I've seen most of the content I've seen on 4K TVs has been HD content that's upscaled. And, you know, depending on the set, and granted, like the more expensive sets do it better, it looks great. It looks, you know, it looks sharper than HD, but not quite as good as native 4K. It's sort of like 3K, I guess.
So they're also selling these, they're also selling these curved screen TVs. Mm-hmm. Is that just a gimmick? I mean, is there really an advantage to that?
It's a load of baloney in my opinion.
Yeah. It's a little bit weird. I've seen a couple of them, and it's, you know, I think it's a load of baloney. Okay. I mean, it doesn't do, we have virtual reality. Right. Just get one of those. If you really want the screen to wrap around your face, get one of those. Yeah. You don't need a TV to do it. I don't think they end up looking that much more convincing and better and more immersive, the TVs. Yeah.
So what are the specs that you should either seriously consider or insist upon if you're shopping for one of these 4K TVs right now, today?
I would look at things like HDR support. I mean, again, I think it is way better time right now to buy a 4K TV or an HDR TV than it was last year, just because the prices are way lower and there's a lot of competition going on. I think TV manufacturers are looking at the opportunity that people are going to be upgrading their TVs. The specs I'd look for are, you know, HDR. If you're looking for HDR, look at how bright the backlight system is. And, you know, the higher end TVs, we're talking about, you know, $2,000 and up, they should have, you know, at least 1,000 nits coming out of that backlight system, which, you know, works with the black levels and the dimming systems that I talked about earlier, to sort of make the bright areas of the screen pop and the dark areas of the screen pitch black.
So is $2,000 the sweet spot, do you think?
I actually did a roundup. You can get a 4K TV with HDR support from anywhere from like $500 to like $20,000. So, I mean, you're at the $20,000 range, you're getting things like OLED and, you know, HDR support for like all the formats that HDR is available in, that kind of thing. But for, you know, around $1,000, $2,000, you can get a pretty good like 55-inch 4K HDR TV now.
All right. We have to take a break. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about streaming services, a little bit more about HD TV maybe, and many, many, many other techie things. Stay with us at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Appalachian State University's Schaefer Center, presenting the Steel Drivers, a bluegrass blend of country and soul, on Friday, November 11th. Details and tickets at theschaefercenter.org. And Leading Results, providing websites on HubSpot and WordPress, marketing strategy and lead generation services for professional services companies in the Charlotte area. LeadingResults.com/WFAE. Well, on the local news roundup tomorrow, with mere days before the election, candidates and their supporters or their surrogates have blanketed the state. The gubernatorial race remains tight. The NAACP gets a federal hearing on allegations that 4,500 voter registrations in the eastern part of the state were canceled improperly. And the Mecklenburg County Commission discusses the upcoming school board vote on magnet plan changes. Those stories just scratched the surface of what our roundtable of reporters will get into tomorrow on this program at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, compared to the last two presidential elections, early voting results indicate African Americans are not turning out in as high numbers in several battleground states. What's behind the lower numbers? What they could mean for the outcome of the election?
That's the Diane Rehm Show, ahead from 10 to noon on listener-funded public radio, 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking tech today with Tim Moynihan, writer for Gadget Lab and Wired, and Ben Johnson, host of Marketplace Tech. They're both at the Marketplace Studios in New York. A final couple of questions about these new TVs. Are you going to be regretful if you buy one, say, this Thanksgiving or around Super Bowl time next year around this time? Are you going to be regretful that you bought it last year?
Oh, you'll never regret. Will you regret?
No.
I mean,
well, maybe.
By then, would you even know? You'd be so happy with your new television.
Well, during the break, Ben and I were just talking about how the prices have just been, you know, in skyfall since about 2 years ago on like really good TVs. So, you know, logically, they're just going to get cheaper and better.
Yeah.
So it's never a bad time to buy, but like next week is even better. You know, the next week that you buy something, you know, prices are going to be lower. The technology is going to advance.
It's like deflation in the economy. You don't want to you don't want to buy something now because tomorrow it's going to be cheaper.
Right.
But in terms of smart TV, because all these things are smart TVs now, are there certain things that you should look for in a smart TV, the smart angle of it, not just the HD 4K thing of it, but the smart aspect of it?
It really depends on what you want to do with your television. I mean, Mike, I live in a house where I'm trying to always convince my wife to stop watching the thing on the laptop and actually like put it through the Chromecast into my TV or stream it on my TV itself. I'm like, wait, put it on the big screen. So, she likes to switch to the browser or like look at Twitter or whatever. And I think it really depends on what you want out of your TV. Do you want Netflix in the TV? Do you have a separate box or a separate dongle that's plugged into the TV that you're using, like a Roku or something like that? I mean, I think to a certain degree, some of the smart TV stuff is about content and where and how you want to get it. And a lot of people already have a gaming console in their house that wants to be the sort of vector for that. And then there are people like me with the $25 Chromecast that just want to stream through that and actually don't really care if the TV's smart or not.
Then let's talk about those dongles and those little boxes you can buy. It's, as you say, it ranges from the PlayStation to the Xbox to the Chromecast dongle to the Roku thing, and even your DVD player can get Netflix and Hulu and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is there a better way to go? I mean, is the Chromecast dongle, which is really inexpensive, are you going to be happy with that, or would you be happier with Apple TV?
I'm super happy with the Chromecast. I just I basically watch Netflix, HBO Go, and not that much more. So to me the Chromecast is like the best possible thing. It's super, super easy. I actually connect it to my stereo. So I have my TV connected to my stereo. So I actually stream music through the Chromecast into my like TV home studio setup.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really all I do. I watch Netflix and I like listen to music in my living room, and it's that simple. But if you're a gamer, obviously, maybe you want a console. If you're a consumer of a bunch of different kinds of content, maybe you want an Apple TV or a Roku. I think it really depends, Tim. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, the thing I would say with Chromecast is you have to be really comfortable with not using like a normal remote, right? You got to fling everything from your phone,
that's true.
Or a tablet, which is fine. I mean, I've used it all the time and it's great. The differentiators, I think, along the way, Amazon has a really good voice control system. That might not mean anything to people, but it eases the pain of having to type in a lot of things with the Alexa voice remote. And their $40 stick now has that, which is crazy.
Amazing.
And you just talk to it. You just talk to it.
Yeah, you just talk to it, and it starts. You know, it'll search Netflix, it'll search Amazon, it'll just start playing things, and it has the full Alexa, Amazon Echo experience on there, so you can do things like ask the weather and that kind of stuff.
We're going to talk about those voice assistants in a couple of seconds here, but I'm old, so. I remember when I remember when there were three channels and you got up to change them. So will television watching ever be that simple again? Because I remember when my mom came to visit from another city, she could not understand why ABC was on a different channel. So I had to explain that to her, and then she couldn't turn it on because I have my thing going through the sound system as well, and you have to push a couple buttons. Even though it's a universal remote, you have to know what you're doing, and she couldn't figure it out. Will it ever be easy again?
Oh, man.
I think – well, what's missing, I think, is like just the background noise of TV, right? You have to like pick stuff to watch, and it's like five steps. Like which streaming box do I use? What, how do I navigate to it? That kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
It's – one of the things that I like about Chromecast and Android TV, which is on a lot of TVs now, is you can just – start playing stuff on YouTube based on a keyword. So you'll just say, like, just play videos about dogs. And then for an hour and a half, it'll just be dog videos.
That is really interesting. Yeah. That like, in a way, YouTube is that place where you could get a bunch of content, sort of random content, but also have it curated for you in a way that has kind of discoverability and randomness to it, which doesn't exist elsewhere. I think I miss that. Like,
I do too,
Every once in a while, I'm sitting in front of my TV, and I'm like, oh, I wish I could just put on, like, that crappy movie on TBS, you know what I mean? Or whatever. And like, I don't have that experience anymore as a television watcher because I've cut the cord. I don't know if it's going to be simple.
So if you're going to buy one of these exterior boxes or one of these dongles like the Chromecast, and you're thinking about, or you already have a 4K TV, do all these boxes supply 4K information?
No.
So which ones do to future-proof yourself?
Yeah, the Amazon Fire TV box, but not the stick, does. And I think that's around $100. There's a entire range now of Roku boxes. And Roku is always really cheap and really easy to use and has way more channels than anything else. Mm. There's a whole range now of 4K Roku boxes. There's a new Chromecast coming out that has 4K.
It will support it, yeah.
So I think, they're all sort of gravitating that way, but you have to make sure to buy the 4K version of each thing.
And I know that the Chromecast Ultra, which is the one you're talking about that supports 4K,
exactly.
It supports 4K content in both Dolby Vision and HDR10. See, more stuff we have to know.
Exactly.
All right, let's move on to virtual reality. But before we talk about exactly the peripherals that are available, the hardware. Some people may not know what virtual reality is, and some people have heard of both virtual reality and augmented reality. So let's talk about what we're talking about before we talk about the hardware. What are we talking about?
It's just, virtual reality is just slightly less cool than reality. I'm just kidding. We've got these different things. Virtual reality we've been talking about for, I don't know, the 30 years. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a way to put content in front of your face very, very close up. They say it's immersive. You're basically covering your face and cutting yourself out from the real world in order to experience all sorts of video games, very immersive movies that are 360 degrees. You can look down, you can look up, you can look all around you, and you're in a new world when you're wearing one of these virtual reality headsets. Augmented reality is different, and a lot of people think that a lot of people in the tech world are actually more excited about augmented reality in a lot of ways, because augmented reality, and you know, I don't want to bring up the sore subject of Google Glass, but augmented reality is this idea that you can actually layer things into the world that you're already seeing. So maybe you would put a television screen on a wall by having a pair of glasses in which that television screen is sort of like projected by shooting light at your eyes. This all sounds very weird, but augmented reality is this idea where you're projecting images and things into the world that you're already in. So the room that you're already in, you might actually see, I don't know, an animated fish swim through the room in a really kind of three-dimensional and interesting way.
So
I don't know if that really explains the difference.
As I understand it, Microsoft demonstrated this, I think, last year with their headset, the HoloLens. And they demonstrated it in a game-playing atmosphere where you'd be in your actual living room and you put the lens on you put the headset on. And you would see your living room, but superimposed on your living room were the game pieces and the little whatever the
robots coming through the walls.
Yeah. Right, they'd be actually coming through your walls. So that's augmented reality.
Yeah. Okay. And it's actually, I've used the HoloLens and it's kind of amazing. Yeah. I mean, they're still trying to figure this stuff out. I mean, we have this company Magic Leap that like nobody really knows what they're doing, but Google gave them $500 million, so they're probably doing something. You know, we have these companies that are starting to experiment with augmented reality, but I think the technology is a little bit more complicated there, just in terms of, you know, the HoloLens. Literally, it does they shoot light at your eyeballs in order to make you see things all in this computerized headset that's all it is. All the computing is in the headset that is on top of your head.
And it has to map the room and everything.
Yeah, right? It has to scan the room. Yeah. It has all these sensors in it. And it's, you know, it's kind of amazing and really exciting to see the augmented reality stuff. But VR is actually the thing that's, I think, more here and has fully arrived for consumers. Okay. And that's the kind of thing where you don't want to do it around your little brother, you know, unless you're sure your little brother's not going to poke you while your face is covered.
Last year, a tech writer wrote, I'm not sure who wrote this, but I read it yesterday, that the platforms for virtual reality and augmented reality were like the smartphone market before the iPhone. And that was last year. And Ben, I know that you said that this is really the first year in virtual reality. This is when it's come together to the point where it's actually more than experimental, it's kind of here.
Yeah, I mean, really what that's about is price points and actual hardware being available to consumers. So a year ago, you didn't have a lot of the things you have now as we move into the holiday season. So you've got your Samsung Gear VR, that's a $100 headset that you can buy and pop your Samsung phone into. And you can, you know, experience, you can watch video, you can play some simple games, you can interact in like a virtual social environment, like something called Altspace VR, where you can like meet up with friends. That's a $100 thing. Then you've got Google's Daydream headset, which is new and actually coming out, I guess, in a couple days now. And that's $79. Again, these are things where the computing power is done by the phone that is actually put into the headset that you put on your face, and they're relatively inexpensive because of that. Then you've got your PlayStation VR, which may be in some ways the one with the most potential, because you already have this big PlayStation user base. You already have all these people who already have PlayStations and are into video games, which is really where this technology comes from and is coming from in a lot of ways. And that's $400. And they have content for it. I mean, that's another issue worth talking about. And then you've got more expensive ones like the Oculus and the HTC Vive. These are all available now. You can actually just buy them, whereas last year you couldn't even buy them, let alone experience the content. So this is the year.
One of our producers, Aaron Sutton, has this PlayStation thing, and she said she wanted me to come over and look at it before we did the show, and I didn't have a chance to see it because she can't describe it. She says it's so unbelievable, but I can't put it into words. Can you?
It's pretty awesome.
We were just
talking about how our favorite game, we both tried it. We were talking about how our favorite game is called Headmaster, which how would you describe it? I don't know.
It's just a cannon shooting soccer balls at your head. And then you have to head them into a goal, but it's just so interactive and immersive and logical. Mm-hmm. Like it's very simple, the gameplay.
Yeah. And it's like a batting cage for heading soccer balls.
But it's this weird plot around the whole heading soccer balls kind of thing where it's, you know, you're in this like soccer prison or something.
Yeah.
It's just a really, really cool, funny game. And it's just as fun to watch people play it because people are like bobbing their heads back and forth with a headset on. Trying to head like imaginary soccer balls into a goal. It's really fun to watch, really fun to play. And it's sort of a Wii, you know, it's like a Wii bowling moment for VR where it's like, this is so simple that it has so much appeal for so many people that they don't have to be like super into VR to get this. They just strap a headset on and it's really fun.
So one of the early platforms for this virtual reality was a headset called, I believe, the Oculus Rift. And it evidently some people who put it on became violently ill when they were playing. They'd become nauseous and it would go on for hours afterward. And I've also read, and I don't know how true this is, that there are experts out there saying that if you spend a significant amount of time with these headsets on in this virtual reality world that it's created for you, that you shouldn't drive a car for several days afterward because your brain has now adjusted to this world where things aren't really there, but it thinks they are. And so when you're driving a car, you might see things that you think are there, but they're not. And so they're saying, don't drive a car after you do this. Is that just hype?
It is a totally new way to experience content, and it does. You know, I was doing this using the PlayStation VR the other day for about an hour, and I took it off, and I could feel the effect. Mm-hmm. So, in terms of like the motion tracking, and it is sort of complicated because you're. So depending on whatever headset you're using, you may have a camera in the room sort of tracking how you move and doing things with the content depending on that. With one of the sort of cheaper headsets, you probably don't have that. But it will make you woozy depending on what you're doing in some cases. And everybody's different too. It is early days. We don't have a ton of science on what the – I mean, we all know that like staring at screens in bed before you go to sleep is probably a bad idea.
Yeah.
And so there are going to be some effects of this, I would imagine.
But are these ready?
I actually had an episode last night with a VR headset where I was wearing one, and then this morning I woke up and it was almost like the Cubs had won the World Series, which was which is impossible, you know. So it will play tricks.
It'll mess
on
with your
brain.
Reality, yeah.
That just doesn't happen.
Okay, so are these ready for prime time? Should you buy them this year? Should you wait till next year? I know that Google's coming out in 7 days on November the 10th with these something called the Daydream View, which sells for $79. Will this be up to snuff? What do we know?
I think we have the one of the challenges right now is content. Like we were just saying that, you know, there are some like really fun games that people are building for this stuff, and you know, there are a lot of good things about it, but it really depends on what you're willing to spend and whether you think you're ready to sort of be an early adopter of one of these things. I would start with one of the cheaper ones if you're curious about it, and then maybe think about buying something more expensive.
That's Ben Johnson, host of Marketplace Tech. Tim Moynihan's here from Wired. We're going to continue and talk about how you hear voices around the house now, and you can talk to them, too, when we come back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Iron Yard, using tech-focused education to create growth and mentorship for people and their ideas. Enrollment available for 12-week courses dedicated to teaching code and more in Charlotte. Information at theironyard.com/Charlotte. And Aldersgate, with assisted living and memory care, providing holistic wellness and social engagement to elders with the vision of ensuring every day is their best day possible. Details at aldersgatehealthcare.com. Well, compared to the last presidential elections, early voting results indicate African Americans aren't turning out in as high numbers in several battleground states. What's behind the lower numbers and what they could mean for the outcome of this election? The topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's your shot. CharlotteTalks at WFAE.org, WFAE on Facebook, or get us through Twitter at CharlotteTalks. We're coming right back.
Joe Klosik, owner of the Corkscrew Wine Shop, a WFAE underwriter.
You have the diversity in your programming and the diversity of the folks that listen. And those folks that listen come to our shop. When we chose to underwrite with WFAE, that was part of our identity, part of our brand. I would say it was one of the best decisions we ever made.
Find out more. Email underwriting at WFAE.org for details.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Tim Moynihan, writer for Gadget Lab at Wired, and Ben Johnson, host of Marketplace Tech that you hear every morning here on WFAE. And he's also the host of a podcast, which is called, it's coming to me, Codebreaker.
Codebreaker, yeah.
Is this the second season?
This is the second season launched this week. It's sort of a strange podcast. It's bingeable, like a Netflix show. Mm-hmm. We pre-produce the whole thing, and it comes out every week unless you figure out the secret code hidden in every episode that lets you unlock the next episode. So it's bingeable if you're willing to unlock this secret code in each episode.
Wow.
And it launches on November 16th. It's a lot of fun. It's inspired by science fiction. It's basically radio journalism inspired by science fiction, and it's about deep questions about technology. This season, we're asking the question, can it save us?
And the answer is?
the answer is usually maybe. But we're exploring virtual reality. We have an episode about that. We have, we're exploring the topic of voice recognition software and voice assistants and things like that, the Amazon Echo, et cetera.
Which is what we're going to talk about right now. Siri, I think, kind of started this category in a way on your iPhone, where you can talk to your phone to get information or to take care of some minor tasks like schedule lunch or whatever. Google has its own voice. Microsoft has Cortana. Now Amazon has created Alexa. They're all women, by the way. In fact, the Amazon $40 Fire TV stick, as you mentioned, now comes with Alexa. So you can talk to it and tell it to put stuff on your TV set. And although you can get Alexa in a discreet box all of her own called Echo that will sit and listen to you and hang on your every word, the Fire TV stick is the cheapest way to access her, isn't it? Because it's only 40 bucks.
It's 40 bucks, and then they have a little new, like, little hockey puck called the Dot, which is like 50 bucks.
Yeah.
So they're really pushing this hard, and people apparently love it. I mean, it's really fun to play with. I asked it what the weather was going to be today. Like, that's just part of my routine now.
So this is like Star Trek, where they go, computer, and the computer responds to them. This is the same thing, and it's connected to the internet, but it's always listening. Should I be concerned about that?
Maybe. Maybe.
It depends on how you feel about convenience, right?
And is the device listening, or is it listening for – I mean, or can somebody at Google or at Apple or at Amazon actually listen to me in my home talking to other people in my home even when I'm not saying, Alexa, what's the weather?
Mm-hmm. It has a wake word, right? So Alexa is the
how
wake
do we
word
know
for-
that?
It is listening, and it does log everything that you do in its own app. So you can go back and, get directions or, stuff like that you ask it. There is a way to delete that, but I mean, that's got to be on some server somewhere. So
why?
I don't think it's like,
why are they logging all that? I have Cortana on my phone and on my computer.
Yeah, sure.
And it logs everything. Why? Why do they have to keep track of all of that?
Well, for your privacy.
There's, I mean, the reason that I think these companies, you know, want to build this. I mean, if you talk to if you hear what they say to everyone out in the world, it's, you know, it's for you. It's convenient. It makes it easier for you to, you know, ask about the weather while you're putting your pants on,
but
et cetera,
like,
et cetera.
I have Google on my phone too, and you can go on onto your Google dashboard, and you can hear, you can play back everything you've ever said to it.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, and it well, the data, I mean, the data is hugely valuable to these companies because it not only does it help them better understand I mean, it's everything from Google getting better at what's called natural language processing, which is this way of computers understanding how we talk. It's everything from that to understanding people's behavior throughout the day. And as creepy as that sounds, it also has some potential benefits for understanding everything from how we might build a smart grid that serves people power throughout the day to, you know, how we might understand traffic movement and make, you know, traffic work better when we're all sitting in self-driving cars someday. So it does have potential benefits from a big data perspective, but it is also a little bit scary, and it's something you should think about before you opt into. It's also interesting how, you know, Amazon's versions of this, you know, it'll tell you the weather, it'll play music for you, it'll deliver you sort of news updates, which all of us in radio should be moderately scared about. But it also is a really, you know, basically it's an easy way to buy stuff. I mean, that's what Amazon is trying to build here. Amazon wants you to buy more stuff. And so that's part of why Echo is what Echo is. Google actually wants Google Home, which is Google's version of this, is a little bit more, I think, information based. It wants to get information from you and deliver information to you, because that's Google's moneymaker, you know, on the internet is figuring out how to suck in huge amounts of data and leverage that in different ways.
So Google Home, it sells for $129. I don't know how much the Amazon's Echo.
The Echo is like around 180, or 50 for the Dot.
And these are discrete little boxes that sit someplace in the house that are connected to the internet, listening to you and delivering information back and forth, and sometimes music, etc. Is there a dime's worth of difference? If you have Siri on your iPhone, or you have Google on your Android phone, or you have Cortana, and it's on a phone or it's on your computer, do you need the Echo? Do you need the Google Home Assistant?
You certainly don't need this stuff,
right?
But it's in the smart home world that we're all increasingly living in. I think that there is a convenience factor here, right? These things work with the Philips Hue that you have, Tim. They work with the Nest thermostat. They work with a bunch of things that would be in your house. That, you know, it's like the ultimate version of the clap on, clap off lights. You know, you can just kind of talk to something in your house and have, you know, your house's environment change from that, right? Is that fair to say?
Well, for me, what was surprising, I mean, I never use the voice assistant on my phone at all. But you put a coffee can that does it in your home, and I use it all the time.
Really?
There's like less of the, you know, public shyness factor of like talking to an inanimate object. it's really good for multitasking is one thing I found out. Like, instead of having to like brush my teeth, then check my phone for the weather or like if there's any traffic delays or anything like that, like while I'm doing that, I'll just say, Alexa, what's the weather going to be? And Alexa, you know, what's the commute time?
So one of these devices, maybe they all have satellite listening and speaking devices so that you could have them in every room in the house. Is that right?
Yeah.
Certainly the Dot, right? It's sort of the Dot, partially built for that, Amazon's
right.
Dot.
Yeah, the Dot is sort of like the sidecar to the big.
So these are ready. These are ready and useful right now. You shouldn't have to wait.
The Google one just came out today, I think.
Yeah,
right?
I'm waiting for mine. It's showing up any day now.
I've been playing with it for like a day, and it is a good speaker. But the one thing I would say is it's not a Bluetooth speaker, which is really surprising. Like it only pulls. You know, you can ask for hook it up to your Spotify account or something like that. You could ask it for music. It has really, really good multi-room support. So if you buy two of them, you can have, you know, the same thing playing throughout your house, mm-hmm. which is great. And that's something that the Echo doesn't do. It's sort of like a mini Sonos.
But if you have if you've invested in Sonos or you invested in a decent sound system, do you want to hear music out of that little box? Really?
It's a really good speaker for its size. Like, I was really surprised at how good it is.
And here's
it's not a Sonos.
And here's a more important question. Can I say, Alexis, play WFAE?
Maybe.
Yeah, Alexa does have a lot of like partnership stuff that it's working on, and you can get content from NPR and some of these other third party apps that are building Audible,
TuneIn Radio, that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think you could probably do that. Yeah.
So let's talk about computers. They're so passe, but let's talk about because the object here is to remove technology from your viewing from view. It should be ubiquitous all around. As part of our lives, but not a box that you necessarily see anymore. That's where we're going, right?
Eventually, yeah. Okay. That is, I think, a big conversation in the tech world and the tech industry right now is like trying to figure out how to make some of the stuff fade into the background. So it just because you know, let's be honest. You know, we have a complicated relationship with our devices. Like we don't, just like you were just saying, Tim. Like the awkwardness of like talking to holding up a phone in front of your face and talking to it, and like how you feel about that, right? Yeah. So I think a lot of conversation in the tech world is figuring out how, whether it's like a wearable device or whether it's inserting sensors into your clothing or whether it's you know, this company, Hello, I talked to their CEO this week. They make this kind of amazing small set of sensor-based sleep tracking devices that help you figure out how to sleep better by measuring how hot it is in the room and when you move around in the bed. Mm-hmm. That's a big conversation in the tech world is making it actually disappear.
Yeah.
So let's talk about computers while they're still around and they're still with us. There's still the never-ending battle between Apple and Microsoft continues. Last week, Microsoft introduced their Surface. Well, they actually introduced the Surface series of tablets several years ago, and last year they added a Surface Book, which was supposed to be a competitor to the MacBook. Last week, they introduced what I think could be arguably called a category creator, the Surface Studio. It's an all-in-one computer that can be used like a computer, but also like a drafting table. I think it declines to 20 degrees, and you can write on it, and it comes with a little wheel that you can turn that does various different things depending upon the program you're in. You called it, Tim, alarmingly thin and objectively beautiful. It is amazing. I watched the Microsoft demonstration of this last week. It is amazing and it is beautiful, but it's $3,000 to $4,200. Yeah. So it makes it very niche-like in its appeal. Is there a market for this device?
Yes, I think so. Some of the demos that were done there were graphic designers and animators that were, you know, they were saying like this just wasn't possible, some of the things that we're doing before, like making a line drawing. And then this is really hard to explain. This is like trying to explain VR. you know, they make a line drawing and then they are able to like
3D
apply a 3D thing so that, yeah, it was insane. And you can do that with analog drawings. You can like make a hand sketch, scan it in, and then turn it into some sort of 3D, rendering.
Yeah, the business version of this has been historically extremely expensive. I was talking to an animator last week who said basically, if I wanted something like this, they do make things like this. I can't remember the name of the company he was talking about, but he was like, they cost like $10,000 to $12,000 to get a machine that does this. And the Surface Pro, the Surface Studio, expensive, is very price point friendly for people in the professional world who do this stuff and use a stylus and want to draw on screens.
Totally.
So if you spend your life in Word and Excel, you don't really need this. But if you are an artist or an animator or some other kind of creative person, and this is going to be part of the Windows 10 Creative Suite. If you're in that world, it does make sense, and it goes after those people, and doesn't it also go after Apple, because Apple has pretty much corralled those people for 20 years.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Most definitely. Yeah.
And I think what's happened over the years is like some of Apple's, you know, professional level tools and machines have gotten less professional minded. You know, that's why they're so popular, because they make beautiful hardware that appeals to a lot of people. But I think in the process that they might have left some important people out of that equation.
And this is beautiful hardware, too. So let's talk about Apple and their new MacBook, which has come out with something where the function keys are that is different. And people either like it or they hate it.
Yeah, there are people, you know, the latest set of Macs that have been released were pretty controversial in a way. You know, it has this touch bar thing where you can it's like a sillier version. It's like a half version of the Surface Studio in a way, right? Yeah. It's like you can touch part of the computer and it does things, but you so it's and a lot of like super users, a lot of people who have been huge Apple fans for a really long period of time and do a lot of professional stuff on them, are actually kind of angry. They feel like Apple has left them behind or sort of left them out of the conversation of how to improve some of these computers.
Which leads me to a question. We have 2 minutes left, which leads me to a question about Apple in general, because Apple created the smartphone, pretty much. They created that category, and they've been the king of smartphones for a very long time, although Android has certainly come in with their various different flavors and thrown them for a loop. Is it over for Apple? Is there anything that Apple can do, anything that a smartphone can do to make it different from where it is now? Where can we go with these devices that we haven't already done?
Headphone jacks. No. it's really hard. I think Apple will definitely in the next 2 years, be announcing some sort of iPhone-related AR or VR platform. I think that's definitely coming.
Yeah. And the AirBuds, I'm forgetting what they're called. AirPods?
AirBud is a
wireless.
AirBud is a good movie, but not actually what they're
AirPod.
Called.
AirPod?
AirPod,
is that right?
I think. So wireless headphones that they've created is like probably the coolest piece of hardware they've created in a long time. Okay. And they need to do some more of that.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, but we don't have time. Is there any one gadget that you're particularly really excited about? If you can do it in 10 seconds, that'd be great.
Yeah, the Daydream Google headset. I'm excited about that.
Daydream and the little NES, the little Nintendo thing.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
And Garrett and Garrett emails regarding the ability to listen to WFAE on the Amazon Echo. It is absolutely available. I use it every morning to stream it through the device. Well, that's good to know. Ben Johnson, host of Marketplace Tech, heard every day on WFAE, and Tim Moynihan, writer for Wired. Thank you for the hour.